Før vi starter, så har jeg bare lyst til å informere om at 29. august klokken 13.00 så har vi en live-innspilling av Frifolk på Salt under Oslo Fringe. Ta turen, kom og hils på oss. Ta en øl, det blir gøy. Ok, men vi får starte. Ja, det lov.
Frifolk?
Neida. Hyggelig å ha dere her.
Hvorfor dette en lyd du hører?
Frifolk?
Du klar?
Nå hager jeg meg litt.
Og det
det ikke sånn at du liksom nå bestilte riks. Da jeg fornøyd, da kan du stoppe. I denne episoden så skal vi snakke om hvordan det å være en internasjonal scenekunstner.
Yes.
Yes, it's very good. You're speaking English.
Yes, English it is.
Ja, de fleste så har vi heldigvis fått snakke på norsk, men det jo noen som helst vil snakke på engelsk, og det må vi respektere, og da må vi bare step up our game.
Ja, det gikk men, bra.
Ja, det gikk fint, men jeg kjente litt på, jeg vet ikke om du hørte det, men det var en episode hvor jeg skulle si goal, og så sa jeg gold.
What's your gold?
What's your gold?
Så, det var vakkert.
Det jo en liten oppgave til dere som lytter til nå, at prøv å liksom høre etter når jeg sier gold.
Det fint. Ja, men vi har snakket litt om å være internasjonal scenekunstner. Hva innebærer det?
Mm. Hvordan det livet?
Ja.
Og mange har jo også snakket litt om liksom hvordan det å studere utlandet, og ja, på måte, hvordan det å komme til Norge og versus dra ut fra Norge også.
Ja.
Det jo en som har snakket om.
Og litt om liksom, hvordan det å være i Norge, og hvordan scenekunstfeltet her, når du også vant til andre steder.
Mm. Har du lyst til å være en internasjonal scenekunstner, Eva?
Egentlig. Og jeg føler på en måte at jeg det. Nå synes jeg kanskje pandemien har ødelagt litt for det. Hadde litt planer i Praha, men det ble ikke noe av.
Sant.
Men kanskje det kommer tilbake? Det håper vi jo.
Ja, jeg også håper det. Jeg har skikkelig lyst til å liksom reise verden rundt og lage teater.
Ja, det skjer jo også mye andre ting utenfor Norge på en måte. Det skjer mye som vi ikke får sett her, som jeg føler man går litt glipp av da, når man blir innestengt, sånn som vi har blitt nå.
Mm. Ja, sant.
Så det har jeg lyst til. Jeg har lyst til å se mer også, liksom bli inspirert av hva som foregår der ute.
Ja, men det ikke det egentlig denne episoden skal handle om da.
Nei, det handler om de som faktisk har jobbet her eller jobber her, og deres erfaringer fra utlandet.
Mm.
Og utfordringene som kommer med det.
Mm. Vi har snakket med en blomsterbukett av mennesker, så det tror jeg blir kjempespennende.
Det blir veldig spennende.
Mm. Skal vi bare...
Snurrfilm?
Nei, snurretrall.
Hva heter det? Jingle? Nei.
Anja Bibi, scenekunstner og jazzsanger som har flyttet til Norge. Aktuell med Bibis Bonanza of Bizar, som en visningsarena for scenekunstnere med rariteter.
Jeg heter Anja Bibi.
Hei,
Anja. Hei. Jeg scenekunstner. Jeg jobber veldig tverrfaglig. Og det, som for eksempel, jeg lager teater, jeg lager installasjoner, performance-installasjoner, installasjoner uten performer, alt mulig. Og jeg studerte fysisk teater, physical theater. I England, og jeg engelsk og tysk, og har vært i Norge i 5 år. Ja, og det spennende å være i Norge, og prøver å skape noe her.
Mm, så bra. Men du har studert i England?
Ja, så jeg tok en master i fysisk teater. Hele titlen var Physical Theater International Ensemble. Litt sånn, ja. Og da, altså, ja, det var litt sånn, handlet om den internasjonale ensemble-delen var hvordan kan man bruke fysisk teater også med forskjellige språk og som lager teater som kanskje ikke, hvor språket ikke det viktigste da. Så du eventuelt kan ha ja, et stykke hvor du har folk som snakker på polsk og så på engelsk og så på tysk og så, og at det ikke så nødvendig for publikummet for, å forstå alt som blir sagt da. At det mer handler om de følelsene og det som skjer fysisk på scenen. Ja, så det var studiet mitt. Men først studerte jeg fransk faktisk, også i England.
Ja, okay.
Så det litt sånn, jeg har gått litt, ja, hvordan sier man det? Sånn, my path hasn't been straight. ja.
Men du har ikke studert i Tyskland?
Nei, det har jeg faktisk ikke. Jeg har bodd i Tyskland, men jeg har ikke studert der. Nei.
Men du prøvde du etter studiene i England, prøvde du da å jobbe litt i England?
Ja og nei. Det litt sånn, ja, som sagt, jeg gikk litt rundt grøten kanskje for å starte med. Jeg studerte fransk, så trodde jeg at jeg skulle ja, kanskje sånn gjøre teater ved siden av noe mer i utropstegn, nei, ikke utropstegn, hvordan sier man det?
Anførselstegn.
Ja, i anførselstegn, something, you know, sensible. så jeg prøvde meg på litt sånn, ok, jeg skal være lærer, jeg skal være personal assistant, jeg prøvde masse forskjellige ting. Og det gjorde meg bare ulykkelig. Så det, og da var det, ja, ble det klart, nei, jeg må faktisk bare gjøre teater. Det det som jeg brenner for, og det det som det eneste som, hvor jeg føler meg i livet, og jeg føler at jeg er jeg. Og, men egentlig med en gang jeg tok den, akkurat den sånn decision, da flyttet jeg til Tyskland for å prøve meg der litt. Og så... jeg har ikke snakket norsk i cirka en måned, så jeg litt rusty. Jeg søkte på en veldig sånn renommert teaterskole i Tyskland. Og for, det var også physical theater, men det hadde vært en 4-års kurs, og jeg var allerede 26. Og det var en litt sånn blanding av at de likte meg veldig godt, men det var litt sånn, vi snakket litt faktisk om det sammen, og de sa til meg sånn, vi tror ikke at du trenger 4 år. og er det verdt det for deg på en måte? Og det var litt sånn en samtale med meg, og så faktisk da, siden de også ga meg ganske mye selvtillit da, fordi de sa, vi synes du har mye, og du kan kanskje bare gå ut og prøve deg i stedet for å studere i 4 år.
Ja.
Så det var sånn det som jeg bestemte da. Og så lagde jeg litt små ting i Tyskland. Men jeg synes det var litt vanskeligere å holde hodet over vannet samtidig som å jobbe i teater der i Tyskland. Så jeg og jeg følte fortsatt at jeg var litt sånn, jeg trengte noe mer akademisk, eller litt mer studie. Og det var der jeg søkte den master i England. Og den var bare et år. Så jeg tok et år master i England i London, i physical theater. Og da var det sånn, etter det flyttet jeg til Norge med en gang. Og, ja. Så egentlig har jeg startet her, sånn ordentlig.
Ok. Og så kom du til Norge, og så prøvde du det her. Hvordan gikk det?
Ja, hvordan gikk det? Først og fremst så snakket jeg jo ikke norsk. så det aller første. Det tok litt tid, og det var på en måte, det var det første prosjekt. Jeg jobbet som servitør, og helt ærlig, da hadde jeg ikke jobbet som servitør og lærte norsk samtidig, og sånn, prøvde å lære meg norsk gjennom å være servitør. Og da jeg hadde ønsket jeg kunne si... Ja, og ved siden så gjorde jeg også teaterforestillingen. Det gjorde jeg ikke. Det var ikke mulig. Jeg hadde ikke energi overskudd til det. Og det... Så det var som første året, en og et halvt år, var egentlig virkelig sånn, ok, arriving in a new country, lære språket. Men så fikk jeg en jobb på operan som publikumsvert. Og da var det plutselig okay, litt lettere. Den jobben ikke like tungt som å være servitør og bære mye og være ikke så tungt på kroppen. Og da begynte jeg å ha litt mer overskudd igjen. Så det var der jeg begynte virkelig å starte opp. Og ja, hvordan var det?
Jeg har sånt, eller kanskje hvordan er det?
Hvordan er det, ja. Det sånn... det går opp og ned. Jeg merker sånn av og til hvordan det å være
ja, for det
ikke egentlig, fra Norge? Sånn, ja, hva ja,
for det jeg tror kanskje... Hvordan er det annerledes, synes du? Du som har litt erfaring med å liksom være i England, du har vært litt i Tyskland, også litt i Kanada. Er det annerledes å drive med scenekunst her?
Ja. På en måte, så synes jeg det, jeg triver egentlig veldig på en måte, fordi hele miljøet litt litere her. Mm. Og det for meg personlig det veldig fint. Mm. Jeg føler at jeg må møte folk hele tiden, og det nesten litt sånn enklere å møte de folka som hvor det kan, hvor man merker å, her det noe, her det en god match, eller i London for eksempel. Det så, så stort. Og da må du være så forberedt for å sånn, kjempe deg gjennom hele tiden.
Okay.
Og på en måte, det alltid noen som kan ta din plass. Fordi du ikke unik, egentlig.
Nei.
Og det sånn, og det det noe jeg setter...
Det er den tristeste beskjeden til en scenekunstner.
Ja.
Du
ikke unik,
nei.
Men det er sant.
Og, det og selv om man lager egentlig veldig unik arbeid, så det så mange som lager unik arbeid i London, at selv om du unik på din måte, så det en annen som unik på sin måte, og det sånn, den unikheten litt sånn likt. Så det sånn, ja, du unik, og du lager sånn klovn som har blomsterbutikk, og du gjør jonglasje i en koffert, og ja, de jo ikke unike, men de litt like. Jeg vet ikke, det et veldig dårlig eksempel, men det sånn, ja, mens her så føler jeg at det litt mer, eller jeg klarer å puste litt mer, hvor jeg, og føler at jeg har noe å si, eller jeg har kanskje en rolle som jeg kan... Som jeg kan ta som min egen. Ok, her, det det jeg lager. Og...
For du møter ikke så mange andre som sånn som Anja Bibi.
Ja, kanskje det det. Og det sånn, men så... Samtidig, ikke sant? Når jeg skulle til Norge, så var det en i London som sa til meg, og det synes jeg var litt cheap, han som sa til meg, oh yes, so you're going to go and be the big fish in the little pond, are you? Og det sånn... Ja, men... Det litt sånn kjipt å eller tenke på det på den måten. Det ikke sånn, ja, her triver jeg, fordi jeg blir sett. Men det sånn, vil vi ikke alle bli sett?
Jo.
Det ikke fint å bli sett? Det sånn? Og jeg også som menneske noen som jeg triver mer med a sense of community. Jeg ikke den som har så lyst til å kjempe meg, eller sånn, at grunnen til at jeg triver fordi andre ikke triver. Det synes jeg ikke kult. Det ikke det som gjør meg glad. Jeg vil heller være på et sted hvor vi alle kan trive, fordi vi alle forskjellige, fordi vi alle har litt forskjellige roller, fordi vi har en god samfunn, fordi vi har en god community of artists som støtter hverandre. Og det kanskje bare litt mer mulig her i Norge, fordi det litere, og det plass til alle.
Så hvis du møter nå kunstnere som litt like deg, så ser du mer enn et potensial i samarbeid?
Ja, ikke sant? Ja, absolutt. I stedet for å tenke sånn med en gang, oh, this is a threat.
Ja, ja.
Fordi det ikke så, ikke sant? Fordi jeg vet at det plass til oss alle
ja.
Her. Og det kanskje også, ikke sant? Det kanskje mer enn en mental, eller det kanskje ikke sant at i London, at det sånn at man må kjempe i London, og kanskje hvis man kan puste og ha akkurat den tanken jeg har når jeg her i Norge, jeg kjenner folk i London som sånn, som bare ser alle de møter som flere nye folk man kan kollaborere med. Men jeg klarte ikke helt å se det sånn, kanskje. Så jeg sier ikke at det ikke mulig I London å ha den samme fellesskap. Men kanskje det litt vanskeligere fordi London så stor. Så det lett å sånn... da må man... Kanskje det også har noe å gjøre med det. Man må være veldig, veldig, veldig aktiv. Fordi hvis du vil møte alle I London... Jeg sier ikke at det ikke mulig, men hvis du vil... Hvis du vil møte alle I London, da må du på en måte være forberedt til å reise I 3 timer hver dag, eller 4 timer, fordi London så stor. Og det var bare helt personlig for meg. Ikke helt... Ja, jeg ikke det mennesket. Jeg setter veldig stor pris på tid til å hvile og la ideene synke. Og jeg følte bare ikke at jeg hadde tid til det I London. Det sånn bare man må løpe hele tiden, og det bare ikke helt min prosess. Nei. Så da føler jeg meg litt bedre her, da. Eller?
I Tyskland, da? Hvordan er det annerledes enn London, eller?
Ja... jeg har ikke så mye erfaring. Jeg var I Berlin, så det litt likt London... også veldig, veldig travelt, veldig mye som skjer, veldig... jeg vet ikke om jeg har så mye å si om Tyskland, kanskje. Nei, litt mer sånn, ja, London har jeg mer en sans for. Egentlig, Berlin for meg et sånt sted, og det har vært så vanskelig nå I koronatidene. Selv om jeg føler meg som veldig bra her I Norge, så jeg ganske avhengig av å gå til Berlin, gå til London til å hente litt inspirasjon og litt påfyll av et visst energi som jeg kanskje ikke finner på samme måten her. Litt av det sånn crazy. Berlin har en sånn bare helt sånn galskap som man finner I Berlin. Det sånn, du kan bare gå på trikk, og så det 3-4 mennesker som allerede inspirerer deg til å lage et nytt teaterstykke. Og det savner jeg litt her. Så det på en måte, det sånn...
Er det litt kjedelig?
Jeg tror ikke kjedelig riktig ord. Det sånn... Jeg merker at... Eller av og til så føler jeg litt sånn at jeg må jobbe ganske hardt for å bli inspirert I Norge.
Jeg kan si at jeg synes vi litt kjedelige. Så...
Gikk det godt til det? Ja, ja. Nei, og det sånn... Det bare sånn... jeg tror ikke sånn når man faktisk går bak dørene hos nordmenn hjemme. Jeg tror ikke at de kjedelige der. Jeg tror kanskje det bare måten folk på gata, på trikken, når de vet at de sett. Da føler jeg kanskje at av og til at det et lite sånn... folk ganske... hva ordet på det på norsk? Well-behaved. Sånn... ja, at det litt sånn, kanskje litt skummelt å vise at man også har noe sånn sære sider eller, fordi jeg har sett det absolutt hjemme hos nordmenn jeg synes ikke at nordmenn kjedelige egentlig det bare at ja, det ikke helt kanskje noe jeg har sett at de så trygge
utad
ja, eller utad var det?
Utad? Altså bare liksom De viser det
utad. Ja, ja, ja.
Offentlig på en måte.
Ja, ja, ikke sant?
Mens privat så det...
Privat har det mye der, og det merker jeg også bare ved å... Når jeg lager teaterstykker som som ganske rare, og har lesere eller sånn... reaksjonen jeg får sånn... Det var så gøy! Oh my god, loved it! Det ikke sånn at... Ikke sant? Jeg tenker kjedelige mennesker hadde bare ikke reagert på det jeg gjør. Så det der jeg merker, nei, de skjønner det jeg gjør. Så det sånn, jeg tror bare at det en liten sånn, holde tilbake litt. Og det sånn noe som jeg, av og til så føler jeg, ok, nå har jeg vært den sære som tør å vise frem at jeg, I'm a little bit crazy and a little bit quirky and a little bit weird. Og nå har jeg på en måte gitt det jeg kan. Nå trenger jeg påfyll. Og da det ofte at jeg drar til Berlin eller til London bare for å se andre folk være sånn litt crazy in the streets så for å sånn føle ok, I'm not alone, it's ok så det har vært tøff nå å ikke kunne hente den påfyllen faktisk. Det er derfor jeg trives egentlig i Norge, fordi jeg føler at jeg har there's a point for me to be here. Det er sånn, ikke sant, i London tenker jeg sånn, i London eller Berlin så tenker jeg, ja, men det er masse folk som gjør det rare, disse rare tingene. Jeg liker Norge som land, jeg elsker naturen, jeg føler meg, ja, jeg har gode venner. Og her føler jeg faktisk at, at jeg kan til, tilføre noe. Jeg har, ja, og det er sånn, og det er et veldig fin følelse faktisk. Og, og det kanskje kan jeg hoppe på det og snakke om det, fordi det, det er så relevant, akkurat som du sa det nå, er grunnen til at jeg har lagt det som jeg har kalt Bibi's Bonanza of the Bizarre, som er et sånn åpen, en skal være, har ikke startet enda på grunn av korona, men når det starter er det en åpen scene som er akkurat, eller grunnen til at jeg har lagt den åpen scene er akkurat fordi jeg tror at folk skal bli exposed to the weird. De skal, så, så det skal bli en kveld hvor folk kommer og viser frem de særeste stykkene, ideene de har. Så hvor, om det dans, om det musikk, eller om det teater, om det videoinstallasjon, eller hva som helst. Men, men det, et sånt, det en invitasjon til kunstner til å lage, tørre å lage det som, som virkelig weird. og jeg elsker det ordet. Jeg synes weird bare positivt. Og samtidig er det for publikummet, er det for norske publikum at, at de skal få en gang i måned, har de en mulighet hvis de vil, for å expose themselves to a load of really crazy strange stuff. Og at det er, sånn, det er noe som jeg synes vi trenger. Det er bra. Det var bra.
Nå skal du få høre refleksjonene til Hanan Ben-Amar, kunstner og kurator, mest kjent fra den mye omdiskuterte forestillingen Ways of Seeing.
So my name is Hanan Ben-Amar. I work as an artist. I've been based in Oslo for several years, studied here and then went to study in Netherlands, and before that I was studying in France, and I've mostly been working with visual arts but in a quite performative way, and then I was involved in a theater play together with Pia Mayarol and Sarah Baban, Ways of Seeing, and I've been also organizing the Winter Solstice Night exhibition. Yeah, we usually call it just the Winter Solstice or the Solstice or the Winter Solstice Festival. There are many names, but so I've been running that since 2012, and it's a very interdisciplinary event. We have lots of performances, and sometimes we had theater plays as well, as you might know. We have lots of concerts. We have different overlapping programs, and that is inspired by the annual Avant-Garde Festival of New York that was organized by Charlotte Moorman, who was a cellist and a performer, and was very interdisciplinary. So that's kind of something I like to do when I organize events, to have like the different art fields coming together in one space.
Oh, det er kjempefint. Veldig bra. Jeg må bare si at når jeg fant Winter Solstice Exhibition, når jeg fant ut om det, så ble jeg bare så lykkelig. For da bare kjente jeg bare, ja! det, akkurat det her har jeg savnet så sykt å være en del av. Så det, ja, anbefaler jeg alle å ta en titt på.
Takk.
Men ja, men du har en mastergrad fra Nederland, du har også en mastergrad fra
Kunstakademi Oslo. Kunstakademi Oslo, ja.
Så du jo godt utdannet, må jeg nu si.
Yeah, I, when I finished my second master, then I was really happy not to go back to any school ever again.
Ja, kan tenke meg.
So it's, no, I, but now I'm thinking maybe I should study again, but yeah, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I've always also been like a little bit between, I mean, yeah, showing my work here, but also in other places abroad and stuff. And I think what's, I mean, I think what's the nicest with having or like going to an art education is, I mean, all of the stuff with the teachers and the program is not in a way sometimes so important, but it's more like the people you meet and, you know, new friends you make and new collaborations you start and all of these things. I think it's super, it's really great. And it's also very, I mean, still, even though they are trying to make art education as something more academic, but it's still a very unconventional form of education and very plural. Mm. So I think that's really interesting and really cool. Mm. Mm.
Det forskjell, synes du, på liksom, kunstmiljøet I Nederland versus der her I Norge?
I mean, there are differences in all art scenes. First of all, like, each art scene is very plural as well. It's lots of different art worlds in one, you know. So it's like, and the visual art scene is also very, like, in general, a little bit split between, like, the commercial field and the more independent field and art for art kind of thing, la pola, or autonomous art also, or more like relational works and so on. So already there, when you're practicing, it's a lot of different groups in a way, and sometimes mm-hmm. they come together or collide, and there are lots of frictions and stuff. And I think maybe the scene in Netherlands is much more international, because Netherlands traditionally has been like a hot spot for art for many, many years, for many decades. You know, artists from all over the world went to Netherlands to start their career or to continue. So it's very different in that sense. Like Norway is more like, more Norwegian, basically. It's but this being said, I don't know. I mean, I would say that perhaps like in Netherlands, there has been more visible kind of politically engaged practices. Also at the core of even in institutions and political discourses and stuff, much more present, I would say, and more articulated, more in depth, sort of, you know. So I think sometimes I hear we have discussions here, and it's like, you know, we discussed it already like 10 years ago somewhere else with much more depth, and now it's like, oh, we're just starting to discuss it. Oh, what about representation in art? And it's like, you know. People have been discussing that for a very long time already, so we have to like maybe go a bit but it's like this, and I think each art scene is like there is no like perfect space for art. Of course Netherlands is much more, because it's more international, so it's like, of course there is like a center of attention that is much more concentrated there than in you will find in Norway or yeah.
Mm-hmm. Har du noe kontakt med Nederland eller andre?
Yeah, I have a lot of contacts with friends. I mean, artist colleagues that are still showing their work, and some of them also moved away, went to Australia, or some are moving now to Sweden. I mean, the thing that happened in Netherlands is also they had lots of cuts actually. Because the reason lots of people were going there is also because there were fundings for art. So that made a difference also like in the international scene. Like, okay, like they are actually, I mean, Netherlands was a country that had like lots of subsidies before, like Norway has now. Mm. And then when the right-wing government came to power, I think it was 2013 or something like that, 12, I don't remember exactly, but the first thing they did is like they cut massively in fundings. So lots of experimental theater places just like disappeared, or like, you know, like small, all of these small things. And some programs were cut, like 50% cuts, or, you know. So even like places like the Rijksakademie, for example, which has always been like sort of major residency for artists, now turned towards like, because you could still get funding through the educational Ministry of Education. So then all of a sudden it's like, are we like maybe we are more like a school now or something? And before it was like you would be paid to be there. I mean, you would, you know, have a salary, and now you have to look for sponsors. So it's a lot of challenges that Netherlands have also with funding their kind of free experimental practices and stuff.
Yeah, jeg skjønner. Men har du noen internasjonale prosjekter på gang, eller skal du jobber du internasjonalt, eller jobber du mest her I Norge?
No, I've always had. I mean, lots of my projects, as I said, like it's pretty much based on traveling and kind of linking different places and stuff as like a method, and lots of field recordings and things like this. But No, I had, I don't, but I don't even, what am I doing now? That's a good question. But I mean, I have some shows. I had a show last year in Iceland and was part, is still now the show in Umeå, in Bild Museum. It's a very big museum there, really great place. It's a show that is still on until April, I think. And then I don't know what else I'm doing. I mean, I'm part of this very big, 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 big group show in Madrid at Reina Sofia. For me, it's like, in a way, it's like, you know, in terms of exhibition thing, it's kind of the materialization of a research. And I'm not so focused on, I mean, it's nice. I like now much more. I mean, I really used to really hate exhibitions before. Now I think it's nice and it feels very cozy and safe compared to the theater world, apparently completely wild here. But my research is pretty much based on all of this sort of anti-colonial, post-colonial research, and I travel a lot for that. So that's kind of, that's always outside of Norway, like pretty like 80% outside of Norway related to other things, you know? And then, so when I show the work, it's like, it could be different places, but of course I have lots of ties with France and Netherlands, of course, yeah. And
so Nigeria. So du identifiserer veldig med det å være internasjonal kunstner?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like, I don't think it's like, a cool group or so. It's not like a. It's not like a, like, yeah, I'm an international artist, you know. But I don't know. I mean, I think I'm not. I'm also very like. I just feel like I could live anywhere. I don't have any like sort of patriotic feelings towards any country. You know, like I'm not proud of France.
No.
Like I think it sucks. Like this. I'm not proud of like, I don't think that, I mean, I'm very critical to politics in general, like, and also the idea of the nation state being revolving around one group of people that is the majority will give the name to the country. This is a very weird thing. So I'm more like, I grew up, I think, in a generation that was pretty much identifying as like a trans-border European / Mediterranean cultures. You know, we've like in a very plural way. So I've always been between countries also. So and now I'm living in Norway and I could also think of living somewhere else. It for me, it's not like a, you know, I don't have any, I'm not this faithful citizen kind of thing, you know. And I would rather fight for like total open borders and stuff like that than like identifying with a specific country, because it's also like, each country, when you look closer, it has a lot of, how should I say? Yeah, it is an imaginary space as well. You know, if you start to look at the borders where they are and all of this,
yeah,
it's a construction.
Of course,
you know. So, and that's super interesting also to work with or to think about, and for me also in my work or just as a person. So I'm not, I mean, it's fine if people are proud of their country. I'm not saying it's
no.
You know, but I don't have that sentiment sort of
no,
but yeah, so we can say international, but to actually answer the question, like international artist in the sense that I don't really like have this strong sentiment for a specific country. I feel pretty much like living in this world with other people, you know. That's kind of how I feel about it. But I think sometimes the term of international artist has a connotation of being like this sort of outgoing, you know, person, like really, I don't know.
No, but I think also it's somehow you sort of end up there and there's also nothing, not always something you can do about it. It's like it's for some people you are just connected to one place and some people are connected to more places. And I think that somehow does come through in the work you do.
Yeah. And those, and I think for me, I'm really interested in interconnectedness also, like the kind of how do you see things in relation to each other. And I think for me, what interests me when I look at, for example, anti-colonial struggles or post-colonial theory and so on, it's like you see the connections between the places, and you see I mean, now Frans Fanon is quoted a lot everywhere, but like before he was totally like in France not appreciated at all because he had some controversial text and stuff that that kind of French intellectuals hated. But if you see his way of relating, you know, he went to Algeria. He's not Algerian. He, like some of his most, you know, famous text, The Wretch of the Earth, is about Algeria, but he's not Algerian, you know. So it's like this. That's, I think, the interesting things, like how struggles are being constructed. It's not because you have like, oh, I am this, you know. It's like, oh, I can recognize something in you. You know, I can relate. I can understand. I don't have to understand everything, but I can relate. And I think that's, for me, what's interesting.
Var det vanskelig å etablere seg som kunstner I Norge, synes du?
Both yes and no. I mean, I think it's working with art. If you want to work with art as a professional artist, it is hard. It's like a reality of the nature of the work. Because you're at the same time you're really free, but you're very dependent on lots of stuff, lots of structures, and there these structures. It takes it some time to understand that you are in a structure and you are part of it. That's I think, and. So it took some time, I think, before I showed my work in Norway, actually. Like, and it's still like sometimes. I mean, I send applications, and it's always like for no, I'm not saying for grants, but like for shows, and it's really hard to get to show your work. I feel, but now I'm more. I mean, mostly when I show something now, it's when I'm invited by some people. So it's been easier the last, I don't know, 4 years or so. Like gradually easier, and I don't know. I don't know if it's harder in Norway than in other countries. I think, of course, if you have with subsidies, it makes it a little bit easier. But then you're also dependent on a different kind of flow, and you work differently. It affects the way you work because first you write a proposal. I mean, it's a it's a very administrative. There is like this administrative aspect that comes into the process, and it's like a little bit strange. Because you write your proposal, then you send an application, then you wait for an answer. Then most of the time it's a no, but then if it's a yes, it's a smaller budget, so you have to rethink your whole project and then do like a kind of new version of your thing with less money, and then send a report. It's very strange when you think about it. And then also like now, like find a target audience and like count how many people have seen the show. And I mean, it's very strange. So
you become some kind of statistical administrator.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I understand that, of course, like, it's kind of interesting though, because like everybody agrees sort of that art is important, but at the same time you have to prove a little bit that is actually useful in some ways. And I'm not against the idea of the usefulness of art. I think it's, I'm thinking like Tania Bruguera has built her whole career on that, like useful art and working into kind of almost more like social workers / artist practice and stuff, which I think is super interesting. But then that's anchored into a practice, and then there is room for discussing it. But then when it's like, I don't know, it's in a way it's kind of interesting though, because you have lots of subsidies for art, I mean a lot compared to other countries, but then I feel like it's not really like reaching a lot of people, so it becomes this very weird double. If you see the discussions about art like in the open space, like the public, it's like it sounds like nobody has seen, nobody knows anything or something, which is kind of weird, like at some level. And at the same time, there is this little bit arrogance, thinking, okay, the people don't understand art at all, which I think is also not really true. It's like, I just feel that the accessibility to look at art is not very present. And I think maybe for theater it's a bit different. You will always have a theater or a Kulturhus or something. Like you will have a few of them, you know. But when it comes to like contemporary art, it's like very limited. Like it's the big cities and then, you know, nothing. Like you step like 1 meter outside of Oslo and then it's like ceramics, and which is fine. I mean, nothing to do. I don't want to have these hate messages now from Kunsthantverkere. It's fine, but like, you know, I'm just saying, like, it's a little bit weird, you know, like the concentration of contemporary art in the big cities, and then you go out. I mean, for me to show my work in smaller places is super hard. Like, they don't want my work. I mean, they're like, what the fuck is this, you know?
Ja, men det samme også. Det veldig vanskelig å selge teaterforestillinger utenfor Oslo.
Yeah, it's weird, huh? And it's like, so, and but I know that when people see it, I mean, there's no problem. I've never had any encounter with the audience that was like, oh, I don't understand what you're doing. This I've never, and you know, I exhibited my work in Morocco, for example, last year in Rabat, or was it 2 years ago? I don't remember, but like, no, yeah, so, two years, yeah, sorry, time these days is just so crazy, but. And it's not like people, I will not say that people in Rabat, the population, I don't think they know more about contemporary art than people in Norway. So we can just like, you know, never, I mean, and my work is super dry as a exhibition thing. It's very dry, you know, and it's not so much explanation whatsoever. You just present it with something. It's very conceptual works. It's very minimalist as well. And I've never heard like, oh, I don't understand, I'm lost, what is this? Are we spending tax money? Like, this is, you know, people are like, oh, what is it? I'm interested. Oh, look at this. This can be this. And oh, I recognize this thing. And these people are very curious. And I had this experience in lots of places, both in Norway and outside. So I think it's more the accessibility, like the to be able to see it, to see the works. Like, there is this great example with this sculpture that was made by FFP, Fellesprojektforbund, yeah, in Kvam, when they had this sculpture in public space and people hated it. And they were starting to make the sculpture, and it's like, it's very experimental the way they work. So they were just installing things, and for people there, they thought it was just looking like garbage or something. And then they vandalized it. They got super angry at it somehow. So they got like, and it became like this topic of discussion, like constant thing. And then some people shitted on it or something. I don't remember what happened. But then then the artists were like, okay, we took it away. And then people were like, oh, but we miss it now. Can we have it back? And I kind of like, I think it's super nice. And you see that even in when there are frictions, I mean, there is a little bit of like, you know, love also in that, in this stuff. So it's back there, and it's the finished version, and it's beautiful. And I think people are very happy. And some people probably still hate it, but still it's there and they want it to be there. So I think that's nice.
Det litt fint at de hater det også, synes jeg.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting what triggers people. Kind of, I just imagine this like grown-up guys, you know, in their late 50s, like going in the night to like shit on a sculpture. I mean, I just love this image. Ja, ja. Like, it's already very, yeah, I like it.
Det veldig performativt det også.
Yeah, it's not, and it's like this engagement, and it's like rage or something, but no, I love also when people go a little bit crazy like this. And I think that's much more cool than like this, what we experience with ways of seeing, with like people like sending hate messages, like anonymous. And this is not, I think, this is just mobbing and stuff. But like this interaction, this bodily interaction with a with a piece of, with an artwork, I think is interesting.
Brandon McCall har jobbet I over 40 land. Så da synes jeg vi kan kalle han for en internasjonal scenekunstner.
I mean, it's not as though I woke up one day and thought, oh, I want to produce independent dance and theater, and I want to go into contemporary performance art or something. That was never a dream.
Childhood dream.
No, never. And I mean, I thought when I went to New York City in 1990 to study acting, I wanted to be like, you know, those American method, brooding, serious actors like Robert De Niro or something. So, but once I got to New York, it was a real eye-opener about all the different kinds of live performance that I didn't have where I grew up. So it was more seeing improvisation as a performance art form, which I had never seen, or collaborative live performance, which now we call devised theater. That was like not something I had ever seen or heard of before. Physical theater, I didn't know what that was. Dance theater, I thought, well, that you mean like a musical? No. Like dance and theater combined. Mm-hmm. I had no idea about all this stuff. So that really excited my imagination. But that was just because I was in New York City starting in the 90s. But I only got to New York because I went to a high school where my mentor encouraged me to study and pursue acting seriously. This was not something my parents were very excited about. They wanted me to stay in California and get a straight-laced job. My father came from a poor family in San Francisco, so I think he definitely wanted me to have a better life than he did. Yeah. And as did my mother, who was a teacher for most of her life, especially when I was growing up. And I think being an actor or being an artist of any kind is one of the worst career choices you can make. Statistically, it's utterly crazy to do. So I think that caused a lot of legitimate anxiety to have their son want to pursue this, because it's just, it's guaranteed to have hardship, sacrifice, heartache, humiliation. It's not going to be good. I mean, the chances that you'll actually make a living at it are so slim. Yeah. And the fact that you'll make a good living at it is even slimmer. So, yeah. I mean, it's fun when you're not in the career. It's like, oh, that's so glamorous and fun. You get to travel and make things. Mm-hmm. But inside of it as an artist, if you're honest, it really is horrible too much of the time.
Okay, uplifting.
Well, no, I think the thing is that in a lot of educational programs, there's all this focus on the craft and on artistry, almost as though the realities of the profession itself are somehow far, far away. And I think that's a disservice to people to know about what they're getting into. I don't know if that tells you anything about me, but it definitely gives you my some of my point of view.
Some of your values. It's nice. Okay, but what kind of artist are you? What projects do you do?
Well, my background was in acting and dancing. I got turned on by the second wave of the postmodern dance movement in America, especially in New York City. And that's been kind of like my home, and that's what I built my career on over the last 30 years. So my taste is definitely towards original performance that has the body and movement as a central storytelling element, whether it's abstract or literal, whether there's language or not. I don't perform as a dancer or actor that much. I don't choreograph that much. I do, on occasion, make an appearance, but I don't really do so much. So more of my career in the last 12 years has been on producing independent theater and dance artists, sometimes performance artists or musicians. So taking what I know from being an entrepreneurial independent artist and then trying to provide services for artists so they can focus more on making their work rather than being so overloaded with having the artistic vision realized and accounting, budgeting, contracts, visas, all those managerial and technical things. So that's what I do. And then I teach part-time and I write. So those are my outlets.
Great. Do you consider yourself as an international artist?
Yes. I mean, I've lived in 4 continents and I've been to 45 countries. My daughter is Norwegian, so I feel like definitely New York and Oslo are my 2 main places that I go to throughout the year at least, and then wherever the work takes me. But I collaborate with a number of freelance dance artists who are in both Europe and the United States. So, yeah. And people encounter my work all over, especially as it gets more remote and digital. It's like the geographic location of art is a little interesting. Like where it's made is kind of up in the air because especially in this last 18 months, I've had students in a workshop that are from four different countries in real time. Hmm. So then it's like, where are we? Or where is this space? It's like, it's just here. It's online. So I think, the relationship of place has shifted, at least in my mind, in mm-hmm. the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Has it always been a goal to become an international artist, or is it just a coincidence?
I mean, it's not something I planned. I think the best things in my life were not planned. I think once upon a time there was more, and I think to a degree there still is and hopefully always will be, there's a lot of traffic between places like New York City and other parts of the world through art and through dance, and especially dance. I think theater can be challenging if language is a primary element to have it travel as much. But I think dance is a great vehicle for collaborating with people from different parts of the world. And I think artists tend to have a sense of wonderment or curiosity to try different things and work with people with different perspectives, different points of view. And so sometimes that can lead to collaborations across borders. But it wasn't like, I think I was more modeling that from the mentors that I had when I was studying at NYU. Seems like a lot of them had a base or a home in New York City, but then they would frequently go to other places. And I thought, oh, if they can do it, I can do it. And I think as life goes on, it's just a matter of trying it. I mean, I'm more of the spirit of just try it. Like if you have a chance to live somewhere else, do it. If you have a chance to try something new, try it. I mean, try it for a reasonable length of time. And if it doesn't work out, do something else. That's the great thing about being an adult. You get to change your mind. Yeah. You don't have to like be stuck like, oh, I'm going to school for the next 15 years. Like, no, just try it for a year or two. And if nothing else, it'll be a learning experience. Mm-hmm. And definitely you'll learn about yourself, because when you're out of your comfort zone, the circumstances force us to change.
But can you tell us a little bit about the challenges you meet with being an international artist?
Sure. I mean, where do you begin? I mean, it's pervasive. Part of it is time. So time is a factor that's really challenging. So you might spend at least a year, probably two, having an idea, being able to articulate that idea in a cogent manner that then hopefully excites other people besides yourself, besides your creative team, which might be just yourself and one other person. But then you have to assemble performers, designers, people to also get excited about whatever it is you want to make. Then you have to simultaneously apply for funding for a project that doesn't even exist yet, far, far, far in the future, and basically convince people that this idea, this made-up thing, has value. You will not get the amount of money you need. You'll get something. So then you also have to adapt after, if you get it. It might take you one or two or three tries to get the money. Then you get the money, then you apply for the visas, you get a good contract. Things will always go wrong. Someone will get sick, there'll be a pandemic, things will get canceled or postponed. The visas will be denied. There'll be a flood.
Has that happened to you, a flood?
Oh yeah, I was in Japan. I remember I was in Japan 21 years ago. And I was on a tour, and this is the first time I went to Japan. It was a 7-week tour. And on the last, like week six, after hearing so much about the incredible technology in Japan, which is true, they had this huge flood, which just shut down all transportation and everything. And I thought, wow, you get enough water, all of human innovation is completely ceases. It's just water. And that's the same with like electricity. Like when you have a power outage, you just can't work anymore because all of our lives are just rooted in, you know, Wi-Fi and devices. So these little things like it reminds us of how fragile this entire enterprise of being a performing artist really is. So it's very challenging. And financially, especially in the independent sector, the money is so puny compared to the work that you put in. Yeah. So you also have to find some other scheme to survive and pay your bills, because there's no retirement plan, there's no job security, there's no time off. I mean, you're just constantly working. So if that doesn't appeal to you, you really got to rethink what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. So it's really tough. I mean, the average, I was at a conference 2 years ago in the before times when they talked about the average lifespan of a independent producer is 3 years. I've been doing it for 12. I'm nuts. And I really think, you know, the more truth we can offer with each other, the better. Because I think there's a lot of rose-tinted glasses in general.
About being a producer or?
Being a producer, what the independent sector is like, because it leaves out so many things.
Yeah.
Like you might have a company say, like, look at this amazing project that we did for, you know, only $500,000. It's like, well, yeah, but what's the breakdown of who got paid what? What was the incubation period for the development of that project? What were the circumstances of creating all those connections for that tour, for those residencies, for all those connections? There's so many things that are left out. So then it just seems like, yeah, it's so simple. It's like, no, that's BS. It's really not true. Mm. And it's like, and if you tell the truth, often the response is like, oh, you're being such a downer. It's like, do you want me to lie to you and tell you it's going to be easy? I mean, I can do that, but I feel like there's enough people lying about how easy it is, and like, oh yeah, just give us your money, give us your time, we'll pay you really junk wages, and you'll work for me for free. It's like, okay, that's great for the employer, but for the next generation, I think that's a disservice. I think people need to wise up and say, no, this is real work, give me real pay, tell me what the deal is, give me a contract that's humane, rather than this handshake verbal agreement stuff, or this this propaganda that if I do this, it's going to lead somewhere effortlessly. That's completely a joke, completely. So I think just like telling an actor, you know, don't worry about it, let's just focus on scene work for 3 or 4 years. It's like without knowing anything about the harsh realities of the business, like even if you're in a union, which is not guaranteed for all performing artists, but even if you are in one, any time of the year, at least 80% of you will not be working. So then what are you going to do? Then it means like, so then it's like, well, yeah, I'm an actor. I got a degree. I'm out there, right? Working year round? No. Like you got to find something else. And then how do you juggle that other job with your calling as an artist, with wanting to have a social life, wanting to have children, wanting to own property, wanting to take holidays? It gets really complicated. And I think not enough people are, maybe that's changed since the pandemic. I think now people are really looking and reevaluating in a much more serious way about what are we doing? The system is not good for all of us in the way that we thought. How can we make it more equitable? So, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
But what made you stay?
In what?
In this life, in this career.
I don't know what else to do. I really don't. I mean, I've been performing, I'm 49, I've been performing and doing something like this for over 36 years. And, you know, people, you know, people say like, well, why don't you just do something else? Like as if it's just, you know, going to a website and clicking submit. It takes time to make a left or right turn.
I want to talk a little bit about your experience from, because you have been working in Norway, for example, at Grusomhetens Teater. And how was your experience from working here versus other countries? Do you have any?
Wow. Well, wow. It's a totally different system. So, I mean, there's so many sides to it. There's so many sides to it. I think the advantage of Norway is that there's a there are lanes and resources available for anyone who has a personal number to apply for a project and potentially get funded. And you won't have a full-time living, but you'll get a decent amount of money to make something as a theater or dance artist in the free scene. That's not necessarily true in the States. The flip side is that I've noticed in Norway, if you don't get that money, the artists don't do the work most of the time at all. They'll just wait and then reapply. The Americans, they'll just do it anyway. And so there's a lot more. The model in America is like you do the work and then you justify financial investment. Norway seems to think, well, you should invest in me. And if not, I'm just not going to privilege you with my amazing ideas. So you do fewer things here, even though you have more money.
Yeah.
You do a lot less. Mm. And the drive and the work ethic here is very privileged. And I'm too old to tell you otherwise. It's like I'm really underwhelmed with the kind of drive, generally speaking, in Scandinavia. Because why work hard? Really? I mean, you got it pretty sweet. You have a very good social system. You graduate without any kind of financial debt. You don't have to worry about healthcare. You can buy apartments, your first one, before you're 30, in the most expensive city in Europe, next to, what, Geneva. So it's really kind of like, oh, yeah, I'll fit in that theater, art, dance thing when I get around to it. But I have my summer holiday. I'm going to travel to exotic locales like Thailand and Egypt and Laurel Canyon or whatever. Oh, no, yeah, I'll do like some theater. But then when you see the work, it's like, what is this really about most of the time? I don't know. It's very provincial. It's very insular. It doesn't really speak to anything broadly in the world. And the problem is, I think a lot of leaders and gatekeepers of the resources in Norway think that Oslo is the center. And I have to let you know it's not.
Oh, and thanks.
Well, we laugh now, but yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've been a little shocked at the ignorance of decision makers here about the role of Nordic art on the planet. When, to be honest, most people have no idea about what's happening in Norway, nor should they, because nothing's really happening of an international nature in Norway most of the time. Mm-hmm. It's appealing, maybe, to other Nordics. But even then, I would argue, is it? Because a lot of free theater artists are struggling to get audiences locally to, like, get excited.
But why do you think that is, that it's not interested in it? Like, and why do they have no interest in, like, outside of the Nordics?
I think I was at a conference about 2 years ago, and there was this idea about the Nordic is an almost abstract idea rather than a reality, but it implies egalitarianism, democracy, freedom, equality. What it leaves out, of course, is like anti-Semitism, discrimination, destroying your environment, heroin overdoses, clinical depression, racism, all these things that are also here right now in Norway. Mm. But we don't want to talk about that. Let's just talk about this idealized vision of like the Nordics. And then by contrast, that is used as a argument against these poor other places that are so savage, so less evolved. Oh, they don't have healthcare like we do. They're not as equal as we are. And it's like, well, until men and women are paid equally for the same job in Norway, which they're not, like, stop pointing your finger. Like, really, like, stop. And also, not everyone wants to be like Norway. Not everyone wants to live here. But it seems like the attitude is that it is utopia on Earth and everyone else is 100 years behind. Mm. So it becomes a little arrogant and repulsive because it shows a complete lack of curiosity or even attempt to understand any other culture, which becomes really interesting when you have like international conferences, international discussions, because then it's like, well, you know, the world needs the Nordic, implying that there's never been any problems here ever. And it's like, yo, you know, Anders Breivik, yo, Like, you, that's a homegrown terrorist you got there. You know, not some foreigner, not some whack job. That's like a average Norwegian.
Yeah.
Average. And it's not like he's a lone gunman. That's like a movement across Europe. I mean, we had anti-Semitist protests all over Norway this year.
Yeah.
During the lockdown. So why don't you clean that up? But it's often used as like, yeah, but it's not like America, as if America is just Confederate flag waving Trump supporters. Mm. And it's like, no, that's not true either. Yes, I mean, there are Confederate flag waving Trump supporters in America, of course. But to say that's all that there is, is ignorant. It's stupid. It's like it ignores all the contributions of different countries in terms of culture, in terms of politics, in terms of innovation. So I think it'd be great if, like, there were to be, like, no public funding for the arts in Norway for, like, 20 years and see if anything would happen.
Interesting.
You know, like, because I feel like if you're only making work after you get funding, then I feel like, imagine, like, Pablo Picasso, I'm only going to paint if I get money in advance. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to write a novel if I get paid in advance. It's like, what kind of model is that? That's yeah. unsustainable. And also, how fiery is your imagination if you need that up front? Like, why not make it anyway? Mm. That's not to say that you have to be poor or that you shouldn't get paid for your labor. I'm not saying that. But I just question, like, what is the drive? And also just learn about other countries, like what they're doing. La Mama in New York City is an important off-Broadway house. It's been around since the early 60s. But it was founded by an African-American woman before the civil rights movement. So, I mean, the only comparison I can think of in Norway would be like Nordic Black Theater. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it's like that's challenging. Like, not everyone wants to build a Nordic Black Theater. They want to join it now that it's successful and has like their own space and does all this stuff. But to like build that, that's a different kind of temperament. And I don't think a lot of people really want to build it. It's the same true everywhere, I guess. Like, people want to join Steppenwolf Theater sure. Company in Chicago. They don't want to like build with like three friends in some church basement something that maybe in 30 or 40 years will be something. I remember working once with Belarus Free Theater at a theater here in Oslo. They had a performance as part of receiving an award from the Norwegian Helsinki Committee. And Natalia Kolaita was like asking the crew to get a light shown on the floor, and it was taking like a ridiculous amount of time. There was all this equipment everywhere, and they just couldn't get it together. And she was like, no, point it there. Like, I see 1,000 lights. And they thought she was so difficult. And maybe it was because she was a woman, maybe because she was really strong, maybe because she's not Norwegian. But she's like, look, we perform in abandoned safe houses outside of Minsk. We get arrested by the KGB. We have nothing. And you guys have so much money, you don't even know what to do with it, but you can't shine a light on two actors that are not standing up? Like, what is wrong with you? And I think that's part of the thing. It's like the pillows are underneath your elbows too much as you play your guitars. Like, you need to like anyone can be okay when you have all this resources thrown at you. But let's like put you in a place where you don't speak the language, you don't have resources, and you just gotta figure it out, like many other artists do as a matter of course. I think that would be interesting, because I think most people, they say, oh, it's too hard, because it's not as easy as it has been. I mean, Nordic culture, in a way, is really new. It's like 170 years.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, Munch, Grieg, Ibsen, that's kind of like the start of a distinct Nordic track versus Swedish or Danish. Mm. But that's new. It's like Shakespeare's been around much, much longer. Molière has been around much, much longer. All the Greeks have been around much, much longer. All of the cultures of India, Indonesia, and yet those are considered somehow less than Norway? Like, what? Are you kidding? Like, you guys got to really have a bit of humble pie and realize you've got money that doesn't equal necessarily innovation or insight. Mm. It just means you have money. Mm. And it's not also not as much money as you used to. I mean, it is dwindling. Just ask anyone who's been working as a freelance artist for 20 years in Norway, and they'll say, yeah, it's getting tougher. It's not it's not like it just grows. It diminishes for sure with time, which is also puts you into a rough spot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, we need to find a different way to, I mean, I think it's the problem is that me saying these things, I mean, I don't live full time in Norway, so I'm probably like, you know, either shooting myself in the face or whatever, and people are probably going to hate me, and I don't really care at this point. But I think that this is something that most people feel in the field of Nordic performing arts, especially Norwegians. It's just that it's taboo to say these things. It's fine to say it like over coffee or at someone's house or in the park, but you don't say that publicly because you're jeopardizing whatever scraps you can have from the table that the diners will let fall to the floor and you can rush there first and grab it. And I just feel like that's not a good model. That's not a community. That's just piranha looking for food. So I think until we can say like, look, this is our community. Why don't we just make something else? Let's try to do something better. Until that happens, nothing's going to change. But I think there are many, many artists who make a lot of really extraordinary work that are not publicly funded. And I think a lot of the people that we study when we are students and we're aspiring to be professional theater artists, none of them went to their Norwegian school. I mean, I don't know, but you know, newsflash, like Stanislavski was a amateur actor who was considered a real whack job. So he's like, well, I'm going to get the other weirdos and go to a summer house and invent the Moscow Art Theater. Mm. You know, now it's like, oh, right, Moscow Art Theater. But that was, I mean, Jerzy Gotowski in Poland, he was like kind of an oddball doing something different. Steve Paxton, who created Contact Improvisation, kind of a weirdo, did something different. But these people were never like the chair of the dance department at University XYZ or head of the theater program ABC. They were like, no, I'm going to keep being weird and different. And we're like, oh, I want to be like them. It's like, well, then leave it all behind you. You know, really, it's like do something different. But if you're going to just follow the same track, then you're just going to get lost in the herd of sheep because it's just like everyone else.
Yeah. So you're going to continue to be not only in Norway, you're going to be in different places.
Well, I'm based in New York City.
Yeah,
so okay. That's my home. I mean, I have a few friends and colleagues in Norway. My daughter lives in Norway. I don't feel valued in Norway as an artist or as an educator. And I'm just too old to keep pushing my head against this tiny oil dripping brick wall. Mm-hmm. I'd rather just go someplace where there's people that I respect doing stuff and where they value me for who I am, because I know who I am. This is not my home. It's a place I visited and try to live in for 7+ years. But it's just way too slow and way too self-absorbed for me. Like, I want to be around with people making stuff happen, whether they get funded or not. And that's not in Norway. Mm. It's not.
True.
It's not here. I think New York City is a place. I think there's other places, of course. But New York City is a place where I feel like they get me and I get them. It just feels like this is where it's at. And I like that. Mm. And if people don't like that about me, I don't care. Because I'm living my life for me. I'm happy. And I think everyone should be happy wherever they are. So if you're happy in Oslo, rock on. You know, make it happen.
Yeah.
And if you're not happy here, find out where you can be happy. Because they do exist. Mm. People do move. People do change. But yeah, Norway's not utopia. Nowhere's utopia. Yeah. Every place has got problems. But sure. It's like, what are you going to do to change it? Are you going to just complain? No, like make something happen. So I feel like I didn't just sit around on my butt and complain when I lived here. I mean, I made things happen. I've directed things. I've choreographed things. I've produced things. I've brought companies from Norway to Asia, to Europe, to the United States. And I brought artists from the U.S. to here. I've run schools. I've done domestic tours. I've received grants. I've been denied grants. I've got to work with a lot of people. I still work with a lot of people. So it's like this is what I got. But it doesn't mean that I'm just going to only be polite. I feel like there's too much politeness. Let's just have a real talk about stuff, you know? Mm. And Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you
for your honesty. Yeah.
That's all I got. All I have is honesty.
Yeah, but we love that. Thank you for not being polite.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming over.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was really nice.
My pleasure.
Frifolk er produsert av Oslo Teatersenter med Lise Grimlund Kjelsen og Eva Rosmarin.